I would say that the body of digital health evidence is rapidly growing, and in some way it's an egg that's now hatched. Now it's time to bring it from a chicken to a kind of a full on healthy rooster.
Hello and welcome to a special HIM16 edition of the Mobi Health News podcast. In this series of three podcasts and four companion videos posted on our site, we'll be discussing a few important topics we believe should be top of mind for those working in digital health and attending the HIM16 event in Vegas. I'm Brian Dolan, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Mobi Health News.
And I'm Jonah Comstock, managing editor. Today we're going to be talking about a persistent question in the digital health landscape. How should developers go about proving how well their digital health interventions work?
But first, we'd like to thank our sponsor. This podcast, like all of our HIMSS 2016 coverage, is brought to you by American Well, one of the country's leading telehealth providers. If you're attending HIMSS16 in Vegas, make sure to stop by American Well's booth. That's number 2154.
So Brian, what's new in the world of digital health efficacy?
Slowly and surely, the evidence base, or at least the literature for digital health interventions, is growing. Last month, the Scripps Translational Science Institute published the results of its Wired for Health trial. So this study was one of the first randomized control trials to really attempt to pin down the effect of remote monitoring with smartphone-connected health devices. It was arguably the biggest story around digital health efficacy in the past 6 months. The results of that study, which, to be fair, this study got its start nearly 4 years ago now, but really those results are going to help frame the discussion around digital health efficacy in the year ahead.
We talked to several efficacy experts about trends in health tech efficacy studies, and we used the Scripps trial results as a jumping-off point with some of them. Dr. Richard Milani, the Chief Clinical Transformation Officer at Ochsner Health System in New Orleans, thinks Scripps isn't the best example of a digital health trial, given the nature of the intervention and the methods employed.
So the intervention was sort of a pretty diluted intervention, looking at the value of collecting patient-generated data. And it was a relatively small sample size, about 130 people. And then finally, the best part is that the outcome was a six-month change in healthcare costs. Well, I mean, we're done. It's very unlikely that education squared plus contacting your provider for somebody that's already got, access to healthcare pretty readily by working in the healthcare circles is going to make a difference in a six-month outcome in healthcare costs. So, end of story. So the fact that the trial didn't show a benefit is not surprising. It's expected.
Dr. Milani packed a lot of criticisms into that short clip, but the one that he focused on most in our interview was that the trial sought to show cost outcomes after just 6 months. That's a tall order.
You get these cost benefits when you prevent a heart attack and a stroke and all these other horrible things that occur as a result of hypertension. Well, that doesn't generally occur in a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 month period of time. So the point I'm making is that there's nothing wrong with a randomized trial. What's wrong is saying, well, how can you possibly expect to see a financial return in such a tiny little period of time? You get the point. I mean, the point was that the intervention was lukewarm, and the time period was not long enough, and the sample was too small. So it was a design flaw more than it was anything else.
Milani wasn't the only expert we talked to who had some concerns about the design of the Scripps trial. But if Scripps is an example of what not to do, we asked them, what's an example of what to do?
And they had some great answers. We'll get to those in just a moment. But first, let's talk a little bit about the ways in which the efficacy landscape has changed since Scripps first started designing its trial. Here's Christine Lemke, president of Evidation Health, a startup that works with hospitals and other health tech companies to establish efficacy data.
This year, more than prior years, has been a real narrowing of the conversation to we need to prove these things out, and we need a different way to prove them out than we've done in the past, and we need a little bit more rigor around that proof. And so I think that entire conversation has changed in 2015 and going into 2016 versus 2014 and 2013.
And here's Sean Duffy, the CEO of Omada Health, a company that adapted a proven pre-diabetes intervention into a digital platform and continues to champion the importance of efficacy data.
There is a bit of an awakening happening. I think it's still you know, it's still early days, and it is, in my opinion, likely to evolve in the way that any other medical innovation that's designed to improve someone's health, really has, where, early on you could just, bottle up sugar water and kind of sell it, and there wasn't really an evidence, an evidence base to support that. And then slowly the buying community, et cetera, started kind of demanding studies, and digital health is as I said earlier, I think we've just crossed the tipping point where the companies that are founding, the people and entrepreneurs that are founding digital health companies today, one of the first questions they ask is, okay, do I need to start to publish? Am I going to need evidence here? Which is just an amazing, amazing thing for the space.
Duffy also says he's seen a change in the way digital health entrepreneurs think about efficacy.
You know, if you look at the years between 2011 and 2013, when, prospective entrepreneurs would come in and, knock on Amada's doors just to get some guidance and help, which I always love to give, they didn't come in saying, hey, I'm pursuing a publication agenda here. Instead, it would be kind of me and team saying, hey, you should think about a publication agenda because, our feel is that that's going to determine, that's going to be important. In today's world, it's in a beautiful way. It's kind of the opposite. I mean, I've had people come into Amada's office and, right at the beginning of what they want to talk about is, where would you publish? Like, how would you design this study? What were some learnings? Like, we know we need some evidence out there. And it just makes my heart warm every time that happens. And that's happening more and more and more.
Duffy even gave us some insight into what he tells those entrepreneurs about budgeting for proving efficacy.
Basically, the capital that needs to go into commercializing a digital health company is more than an enterprise software company. Because if you're out selling, a SaaS service to CIOs, you don't need this necessarily. And it's, of course, less than if you wanted to start a biotech company that has to, show that their small molecules effective. But you do need to be prudent about raising additional capital and budgeting for trials. Good rule of thumb, that I share with entrepreneurs who are at the earlier stages is like, look, in your Series A, make sure you've got at least $500,000, $1 million for evidence, generation, and then, and grow up from there.
On the provider side, Dr. Milani from Ochsner sees a different trend. A growing cultural pressure to collect patient-generated health data and use it with the electronic health record.
Number one is there is a sort of a greater demand from individuals or consumers to be able to generate the health data coming from individuals from their home or from wearables, and for that to be incorporated into their EMR. And moreover, there's been a subtle change in health systems in terms of how to now encompass the data and bring it into the EMR. So I think, again, there's a lot of sort of cultural changes that are occurring in delivery systems to adopt these things or to be willing to try these things. And I think that's a significant change that's occurred over the past year or two.
So that gives us a pretty good idea of some of the trends in digital health efficacy, a growing recognition of the need for efficacy data, a prioritization of efficacy for entrepreneurs, and an increasing interest on the provider side in patient-generated data.
So what about our question from the beginning of the show? What does a good approach to efficacy in 2016 look like?
Well, experts seem to agree there's nothing wrong with a randomized controlled trial. The key is recognizing when an RCT is appropriate compared to other options. Here's Lemke again.
So I would say if the intervention is only trying to claim, increased engagement with something, and that increased engagement might someday tie to a better outcome, there's a different way to measure that engagement and quantify the value of that engagement than running a full-on prospective RCT. If the intervention is actually trying to claim, we help keep people with diabetes, we help keep their, HbA1c's in control, and we do it with this mechanism of action, and this mechanism of action leads to this control, which leads to some financial gain or some financial savings to the system. I mean, that's a therapy that has to be proved in kind of a traditional therapeutic way, how healthcare has done this for ages, which is, look at retrospective controls and arms, and then design and properly design, you know, prospective RCTs to really validate these things. It's the gold standard. But if you want to enter into healthcare, you want doctors to prescribe these things. I'm sure Dr. Malani has a strong opinion about this too, and maybe it's even different from mine. But if you want physicians to prescribe these things so that patients adhere to them, so they get some sort of outcome, and healthcare, the industry reimburses for these things, then, you know, you kind of still have to follow the gold standard.
And in those situations where a full-on RCT isn't appropriate, digital health technology can be a boon because it allows for continuous data collection in the field. At Omada, Duffy says, they never waste the opportunity to continue collecting data.
So we have a fully staffed data science team at Omada where their sole goal is to work to make, really work to create the dynamic where today's users in our program and today's participants actually make the program better for tomorrow's each and every day. So it creates the sort of intervention that never is done. I mean, these aren't the things that, you know, you put in the oven, set a timer, hear a ding, and you take them out and, you know, celebrate victory. A lot of digital health offerings are going to be able to rapidly improve.
For Dr. Malani, the easiest way to tell at a glance a well-designed RCT from a poorly designed one is to look at the journal it's published in. He cited a text messaging study from the Journal of the American Medical Association as an example of an efficacy study done right.
So there's been a couple of, I think, very interesting, you know, studies looking at just texting, one of which just came out in JAMA, you know, late last year, that was basically automated sort of semi-personal text messaging, you know, on risk factor modification. And I think we can take that information and use that, you know, broadly to say that texting has the capability, if done properly, to in the right setting, to impact behavior change. And that's about as far as you can take it. But each study needs to be evaluated on its own. Is this the first time, or has it been reproduced, and is it consistent? And, you know, are these findings something that, you know, can apply to other areas? So I think each study would have to be valued on its own, you know, findings.
Whatever the format is and wherever the data ends up published, our guests had a lot of different ideas about what to keep in mind when collecting data. Lemke stressed the importance of differentiating between interventions that don't work and interventions that might work, but only for a certain subpopulation.
I think the industry has sort of made these broad statements about what works and what doesn't work, but have always forgotten the qualifier of for whom. And I think some of these things are going to be incredibly appropriate for wide audiences. Some of these are going to be incredibly specific to the types of people that like to engage with these things. And in some cases, even the types of behaviors the people who like to engage with these things exhibit. We shouldn't throw everything away because it didn't work on a broad population, but there are some nuggets that work really, really well for specific types of people.
She also noted that how a patient is introduced to an intervention can make a big difference.
We see across the board, anecdotally at least, that when a provider tells you to use even something simple like a medication reminder, those people stay with that medication reminder much longer than they would if they just downloaded it from the App Store on iTunes. So that entire delivery mechanism has to be smoothed out. Providers have to be involved in this chain if we really want to drive efficacy, and it's not at all clear the best way to do that yet.
Dr. Malani from Ochsner had another caution for digital health developers: the importance of not just collecting data, but using that data in a meaningful intervention.
It's one thing to be able to collect data and talk about it, but it's another thing to collect data and then use that to now make change. To whether it may be a medication change or a lifestyle change, but the point is that it's insufficient just to be able to look at the data and be quote unquote an alarm company, and then go back to the existing model and say, okay, existing model, you haven't worked up until now, but now the fact that I have this data, now you're suddenly going to work. I mean, that's a little bit off, I think. What you can do is say, listen, we're going to utilize this data and then institute a slightly different delivery model, where we can actually make changes at the time that we see the changes needed.
Dr. Malani made another really interesting point. There's no value in proving that an intervention works if you don't also prove that it's workable?
One, we have to prove the science is effective, and it does make people or can make people healthier or reduce health consequences. And number two, then, the practicality of how does one, if I'm a routine delivery system somewhere in the nation, be able to adopt this in a way that works in my delivery model? So it doesn't do me any good to have a cure if I can't implement or execute on that. So I think there's really two steps here. The scientific step, which we just talked about quite a bit, and then the secondary step, which is, you know, is it adoptable? Is it something that can be utilized by the average, you know, health system out there? And I think that it's incumbent upon us in this industry to be able to demonstrate both.
We also asked Duffy one more question, relevant in light of some recent high-profile negative studies. What happens if you're one of those digital health entrepreneurs and your efficacy study doesn't quite pan out? But Duffy thinks that won't happen all that much to startups.
You know, interestingly, the power of digital is that in pilot work, you can actually start seeing some really quick data coming in to have some confidence that, look, I actually think we've built something here when we properly design a study. And bit by bit, you just become more confident that when you run the study, your product is now in a place where it can deliver some results.
Well, that about wraps it up for us. It's interesting to see the conversation about digital health efficacy evolving over the years.
And we expect that conversation to continue, especially in the halls, panels, and sessions of HIMSS16 in Las Vegas next month. We'll be there, and we hope to see you there, too.
If you are heading to HIMSS16, be sure to stop by telehealth company American Well's booth at 2154. And in the meantime, stay tuned for the next episode of the Mobi Health News podcast, when we'll be talking about patient-generated health data. Until next time, this is Brian Dolan.
And I'm Jonah Comstock. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.